is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I'm pleased to have again as my co-host Mr. Calvin Green, who is a church leader, a youth leader. He's also involved in the Bahamas Boxing Commission and very heavily involved in Junkanoo, and he's also a veteran of the hotel and restaurant industry. Good night, and welcome again, Mr. Calvin Green.
Good night, Doc, and welcome to our audience. Let's talk.
We're here in the month of November, and I must not be remiss in mentioning as a urologist that this is nationally and internationally denoted Movember, where men are encouraged to grow out their mustache in a form of solidarity so that we can look at important health topics related to men, not just the physical health, but we also stress prostate cancer awareness, which is a very important topic for our country, where as many as 1 in 6 men are going to get prostate cancer in this lifetime. And prostate cancer is the most common cancer in this country and the number one killer of Bahamians in terms of cancers as well. We also talk about testicular cancer. We are very fortunate. Testicular cancer is, although when we do find it, unfortunately, is usually at a late stage. I always encourage men to examine themselves at least twice a week. Take note. Obviously, you're showering and bathing every day and you're washing down there, but actually take a little 2-3 minutes special note to see if anything feels abnormal in terms of texture and contour, and is there any pain associated, etc. Not every scrotal discomfort. There are many things that can cause scrotal discomfort. In fact, if you look at testicular cancer on the whole is actually painless when it presents. But black men rarely get testicular cancer. It's the opposite of prostate cancer, where we get a more aggressive form of the disease, almost a different entity, and we get it at higher numbers in younger years than our other racial counterparts. But for testicular cancer, God has saved us in regards to that condition. We also want to be stressing mental health. Depression is a disease in itself. We're not going to to confuse it with just sadness or feeling stressed or anxious, where any of us experience that at some point in our life. We're talking about depression where it may be a chemical imbalance, where it may be low serotonin levels. That can manifest in so many different ways, can even lead to physical ailments. We always have to talk about making the Bahamas whole again. We're going to talk about the mental issues in terms of depression, anxiety, and stress. We're going to talk about the physical issues, whether it's non-communicable diseases that are overwhelming our country in the form of hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, cancers. We are overwhelmed with cancers, male and female, breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, of course, the big three. But we also want to talk about the social ills that are afflicting our country. We can have the healthiest nation on earth, but if we're afraid to go outside our doors, if crime is dictating our every life decision and existence, it's not a life worth living. But my bigger question, do you think, Mr. Calvin Green, as a nation, are we happy? Is the Bahamas happy? Are we a stressed nation, or do you think that we are happy? Obviously, everybody has their economic stresses. It's a very expensive country to live in. But do you think, as a whole, Bahamians are happy?
my observation is, and I could be very wrong, and while I don't have a scientific analysis of this, I don't think we're so happy.
Well, you're a man of the people. You speak to people every day. You're a people person, and you've been around. And then we also have to say, how do we measure happiness? I see that it was once described as the quality of your life minus envy. And that is how happy you are. So we are a very envious society. So that's a drawback of our culture, our nation. A very jealous society. We can even describe it as, even jokingly, we're full of haters. So anything positive happening in someone's life, whether it's your neighbor, your church member, your cousin, whether it's a job promotion or an award of recognition, a new car, the purchase of a new home, someone getting married, there are too many people in our country who are consumed by envy and hate. And it's a horrible distraction, and it's affecting the quality of our life by us never allowing us to be happy for what we have. So we spend too much of our lives, too much energy, obsessing over what others around us have instead of taking pleasure in all the wonderful that we have going on in our own lives. So we also have to emphasize there's really no thought into what does someone go through, the years of sacrifice, the years of failing, the years of falling down on their face and picking themselves up to succeed, to be able to purchase that home. How many failed relationships and disappointments would someone possibly and more than likely went through before they found that perfect soulmate and got married? But if we're too far jealous of the end result and that what we see, and materialism is ruining our country. So if you live your life continuously wanting, you're essentially deferring your happiness and replacing it with discontent. And in the moment, and if you are constantly on the move and working continuously and not essentially taking time to smell the roses, life is going to pass you by and you're not going to enjoy the here and now. And it's important. Life is not promised to any of us. So I always ask the question, if you were told you had 6 months to live, what would you do with your life? How would you live your life differently? Would you be obsessed over the small matters, or you would just look at the most important matters in your life, which should be family and friends and your community?
Well, you know, Doc, in my opinion, Bahamian measure happiness in money.
Which is very sad.
Which is in money. The happiness to them is not in terms of the things that you talk about, a nice surrounding, going to the beach, enjoying the simple things of life. They measure happiness in money. And that's why we have so much unrest in our country. This union won this. This union won that. This person won that. The taxi drivers out there, they are having whatever they're doing out there. And so our happiness is always tied to money. And no matter how much money you pay, it still becomes a problem because they find something else to do with that money. And so there's not in terms of happiness, that platitude is never reached because it is always measured in money as opposed to the simple things of life, enjoying something. And that's our problem.
And we have to look at the mentality of the young persons, particularly men in our society. I was speaking, frankly, with a 16-year-old several months ago, and I was during summer holidays, and I was asking, what are you doing for your summer? How are you making this a productive summer? How are you improving yourself? How are you helping your family? How are you helping your community? So he says he stays up all night watching TV, playing video games. So I said, do you read a book? No. I put down the books because school is over. So I said, don't you think you can gain something by learning? Don't you think you want to keep your mind active? Don't you think that it's wonderful to extend your educational endeavors? No, I'm not going to pick up a book until I have to in September. So I said, what are your dreams? I mean, why don't you get a part-time job? Why don't you volunteer? Why don't you help your family? Why don't you clean your yard? He said, no, this is my time to just relax and take it easy. I said, well, what are your dreams? What are you looking for in life? What do you want to be? said, well, I've been looking, I've been doing a lot of research, and my dream is to own a Rolex watch. And I just said, I just shook my head, and I said, what is the importance of having a Rolex watch? You should first look for happiness. You should look for contentment. You should look for fulfillment. Right now, you should endeavor your very best to get the highest level of education possible, to have as many degrees behind your name as possible, to see the world, to experience the world, to improve the world, and you can start with improving your own community. The last thing you need to be worried about is a Rolex watch. The first thing, this is a very violent society. By having a Rolex watch, you're putting your life at danger, and that comes to the greater matter of not just materialism, but this is a crime-ridden society. It's going to take our society down. It's going to destroy our tourism golden goose. How can we rectify this crime situation? What are your thoughts, Mr. Calvin Green?
Well, it comes to, we have to ask ourselves what kind of society we want. What kind of bohemian society we want. How do we want to live? Do we want a kinder, gentler society? And while this may all be what I call philosophical, people respectful of older people, respectful of how you drive on the road without having to blow you 10 times just to move.
Or respect for other person's possessions.
Yes. You know? And so what kind of society we want to develop? And I think that is a very important question in our life right now, what kind of society we want, because we don't know what kind of society we want. And so we're all over the place, and we don't treat each other well. Some people don't even know the person who lived next door to them, because we have this thing that we have now arrived to what I call a certain station in life. And so I don't need to know the fellow next door, or I don't need nobody. I don't even need God.
I agree. We have a very fragmented society. And the days gone by where communities raised each other's children are long gone. But if we don't confront the crime problem realistically without empty slogans and really looking at the problems, then crime will continue to destroy our country. Let me give you an example. A 10-year-old who is going to, in 10 years, end up committing armed robbery or murder. This is a scared, disillusioned 10-year-old who doesn't have any positivity in his life, likely never had anyone who loved him, sees no purpose or no future for himself. He has no love for himself, much less his family or his community. We need to reach out to these young persons before they become the armed robber, before they become the murderer, before they become the rapist. Let us save these 10-year-olds. And we put so much money into locking up these men, which we must do, but why don't we prevent the next generation from going down? Why are we having a factory of creating criminals more and more every generation? That has to stop. Nobody is born a heartless, ruthless killer. They are created, and the lack of a family structure, the lack of a father in the household, a lack of discipline in the school, a culture that's obsessed with materialism. That is tearing our country apart, and that is leading to criminality. And we need to address it. We need to save the next generation. We need to turn things around. I'll talk about another personal story. I remember, this is 40 years ago, I had a friend who spent the whole summer working two summer jobs because he wanted this bicycle. And he worked, at the end, I remember, in August, he got his bicycle. Within 2 days, there was someone his own age who stole the bike from him. So I said, why didn't you go to the police? Why didn't you make a report? Why didn't your parents confront his parents? Well, he says, well, although he has parents, his father is an alcoholic. His father beats up his mother. There's no support in the family. He created his own gang, so there are a group of them. If I were to report them to the police, they'll probably flatten my parents' car tires, they'll probably break up the house, et cetera, et cetera. So this man was doing all the right things, worked himself, and gave up his whole summer to get a bicycle, and this young man just took the bicycle without doing anything. I said, what did this guy do with his whole summer? Well, he just smoked weed all summer. So I just happened to speak to this guy who never came back to the Bahamas after university. He went and got 2 master's degrees. He went into an area of technology that the Bahamas would love to have. He's a very successful man living in Florida right now with an American wife. And I asked him why he never came back to the Bahamas, and we would love to have him come back and do great things for our country. And he said that instance where he felt that he did everything right and society could not pretend, could not do anything for him. He said he didn't want his son to grow up in such a society, so he never came back. And then he went further and he said that, I said, what happened to that young man? Did you ever find out whatever happened to him? He said, you know what? Not only did he end up in a life of crime, he was on bail twice, ankle bracelet. The first time was for murder. The second time was for armed robbery and attempted murder. And when he was on bail for the second time with ankle bracelet, he was killed in a drive-by shooting, and his cousin was killed at the same time. So we saw, I could have, even as a young man, I could know that this man was going to lead down the wrong road. Where can we save these young men from going down this road? These men just aren't created in a year and not created in 2 years. These men are going, you can see it, and we're almost, it's almost like a runaway train. We're helpless to stop it. We need to institute some way to save these young men before they destroy themselves and destroy the fabric of our society.
But Doc, interesting story, but let me tell you, I grew up in an era where if you bought something home and your parents, my mother, I couldn't bring anything home to her house that was not accounted for, or she knew where I got that from, and it sat in her house. You couldn't do that in the era that I grew up in. And you see, we cannot continue to keep blaming or putting the responsibility of being a good mother or a good father on the government or the school or the teacher. That building block begins at home. There's nothing brain you can't understand about that, where you are taught right from wrong. And I think we have now come to an era where we don't even know right from wrong anymore. And so when you talk about the young man who will be killed, or you have to, your parents have to show you the way, and mothers in our country have to stop cloaking men, young boys, knowing that they're doing something wrong, but because they're bringing home TV and cell phone and this and that, they accept these things. And so that is, and when the problem comes, they say, oh, my good son. How that can be your good son when you know your son is doing things wrong? You know he's bringing you stuff that you shouldn't know.
I remember 25 years ago when I was a young physician, I was rotating through Sandlins, and we would go once every 2 weeks to the prisons, and we would talk to prisoners who were suffering from depression and anxiety, etc. And I remember a gentleman who was relatively young, and he was serving 28 years for armed robbery. And we spoke about him, and his story stuck with me. And I asked him, I said, was this the first time you were caught robbing someone? And he said, no, this is probably the 50th or 60th time. Too many times to count. My life was being a criminal. And there's so many, there are hundreds of men in this country. Just as there are men who go out and there are police officers, defense force officers, teachers, they work for a construction company, etc. They're men, their life is crime. Committing crime, that's how they sustain. And then I said, what about your parents? What about your family? He never knew his father. He said his mother would accept jewelry he would steal. Or she would accept purses or things or clothes that he would steal from people's houses. So if your own mother is supporting your criminality, That means that mother doesn't care about you, doesn't care about your future, doesn't care about society, doesn't care about herself, because she should have been in jail as well. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Kino Weiss, along with you and your co-host, Doc.
Good evening. Good evening.
Thank you. Raymond here. The reason why I called you, right, on Bay Street, where the Mademoiselle used to be?
Yes.
In the corner right there?
Yes.
That's always filled with smoke, and it's not healthy. I wish you could look into that and speak to the authority of that, please.
I will speak to who I know, and that is a very good environmental problem. Thanks for bringing that to my attention.
Thank you.
All right, so we have a Christian, we have a democratic society, but how many of us actually feel free? Feel free to go out even in the daylight hours, not much less the night. I mean, most of us just don't feel safe. Let's look at a loving couple, whether they're dating or married, either legally or common law. Do they feel safe parking their car along the beachside and walking along the beach or watching the sun rise or looking at the moonlight and having a romantic walk? Absolutely not, because eventually they're going to get held up. They're going to have two young men in dark clothing coming up with them with pistols and putting the gun to their head and threatening their life or assaulting them and taking their car and their possessions, etc. We are under siege. It's a war out there, and we're under siege. And the tourism goose is under great danger, and it's going to take our country down. It's going to take our economy down.
Doc, I remember, growing up, there were two areas in our country where you could go. You could go on Goodman's Bay with a date any hours of the night, or Montague Beach, and just sit there at 12, 1, 2 a.m. in the morning and not worry about a thing. Imagine that. I mean, that was what I experienced as a young man growing up, and you could go to Goodman's Bay or Montague Beach and just sit there and not worry about anybody robbing you or anybody coming to your car. I don't even know how I was just talking with my mother today, and we were talking about the days when we could have gone to sleep. We went to sleep many days and left the door open. Sleep with the door open. Or my grandmother falling asleep on the porch and not having to worry about anybody robbing or coming to kill you. I know those days could never come back, but those were the kinds of days that I experienced as a young boy growing up. You could have just walked, leave the door open, the back, the front door open, go to bed, and not worry about a thing. That was the kind of Bahamas I grew up in as a young boy growing up.
Well, that is not all completely gone. There are some family island communities where you can do that. There are less and less of them, but I have a lot of patients that come from every corner of the Bahamas, and they'll talk about never worrying about anyone. They might have one wayward person who likes to break in and everything, but for the most part, everybody knows everybody. Everybody respects each other's possessions. They look out for each other. Everybody knows everybody's children, and they leave the windows open. They don't lock the doors. They don't even have bars on their windows. So hopefully, if those communities still exist, hopefully we can bring those days back. I'll bring another story to light. I was speaking to somebody a month ago, and he was he's an educated person, comes from a good family, a businessman at this point. He was telling me about stories 20, 30 years ago where on three different occasions he had a gun held on him. And he would, in horror, speak of the situation. Once he had a gun put to his head, once he had one put directly to his chest. The other one, he said, was put right out on his neck. And these are, how many of us have had guns pulled on us? It's a rarity in this society that you can find a Bahamian or a Bahamian resident who hasn't had their home burglarized or hasn't had their car broken into. It's not a question of if it's happened, it's how many times it's happened or how often it's. I remember I had a friend and a patient who moved off to Long Island. I said, why did you move to Long Island? You have a great job here. He said, Doc, I live close to the police station. And in a period of 7 months, my home was burglarized 9 times. He said, you just can't live like that. And I live right in eyes view of the police station. I said, there's no justice for me. I don't feel safe. I don't sleep at night. I don't feel safe for my children. I don't want my children growing up in this community. And I saw him again, and he's very happy in Long Island. And he's one of the ones that says he doesn't even lock his door in Long Island. So I guess instead of, if you're fed up with the Bahamas, look at maybe you're only fed up with New Providence, move off to the family island. Maybe you can feel find a safer existence. How many of us know someone who's been murdered? Everybody knows someone who's been murdered. Most of us know multiple persons, even close to us, who have been murdered. And that's a crying shame. How many children have seen dead bodies? How many children have heard gunshots or been witness to drive-by shootings? And these are becoming more and more prevalent. It used to be that we were safe in the daylight hours. You were safe if you were visiting your grandmother. Now, lawlessness runs this country. And I don't know how we're going to stop. The judicial system is failing us. I know a lot of wonderful police officers. I do not put the blame on the police. I think that they have a very high detection rate. They're doing what they can with the resources they have. I know a lot of prosecutors in the public system, and they endeavor their best to do what they can under circumstances that are overwhelmingly difficult. We have such a small society. I know of cases where persons have been locked up, and they call the witness to the crime and threaten them. I mean, where is the justice in for those who are wronged in our society?
But you see, Doc, the danger in all of these things that you're talking about, what is happening now is our society, our country is becoming numb to these things now. It doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, we have become numb. And people generally do not react until it happens to them. It could happen to somebody down the road or neighbor or any, but nothing happens until it happens to them personally for them to understand what is going on and why we need to be in control of what's happening. So we're becoming numb to so many things. Nothing means anything anymore. Yeah.
I mean, you're getting 2-year-olds shot in the head.
Yeah.
You're having 8-year-olds being shot in drive-bys when they're doing their homework at their dining room table. It's horrific. We cannot even comprehend the horrifying acts that we just have no love for our fellow human being. We just have no love for our country. And it's getting worse and it's getting worse. There is no safety. What is the quality of life for someone if you don't feel safe in your own home? If you don't feel safe having your child go out to the park to play? If you can't go out and exercise at 5 o'clock in the morning because you're afraid you're going to be held up or assaulted? And I've spoken about this many times with Dr. Wesley Francis. There are many things wrong with PMH, and I'll be the first one to bring that to light. And no one's going to argue that. But there's one great thing about PMH. Because we have so much in the way of trauma, we have an excellent surgical trauma team. Mm-hmm. And if you were to look at the number of attempted murders versus the number of potential actual murders, if the murder rate was 140, it could have easily been 170. But because of the wonderful work of trauma surgeons, where you have patients come in shot with automatic weapons, sometimes shot 13 times. Anywhere in the world, they probably wouldn't have survived. We have been able to get them to survive. And we don't even talk about how many persons in our country are missing. And many of them are murdered, but we just never find the body. So the murder rate is not even close to what it actually is. So when we look at the horrifying statistics, it's not even it's much worse. We have a call coming in. This urologist speaks.
Doctor, how you doing?
I'm very good, thanks.
And that's good. And good night as well to your guest.
Mr. Calvin Green, yes.
Thank you.
Yes,
good evening. Thank you.
Good, yes, good, good, evening, Mr. Green. You know, 12 years ago, the former commissioner of police, Mr. Allison Green Slade, did an interview with Jeff Lloyd on National Guardian Radio. And he said, you know, we are in a bad place. He said that how is it that we can catch these so-called criminals? We lock them up, they make a phone call, and they are allowed to go. They're allowed to get out of jail. So it speaks to the level of, you could call it, I don't know what it is. It has to be corruption, where individuals who know somebody, they make a call and, you know what, let them go. Don't charge them. Cease and desist. And, you know, we are such a small society that people are watching. People are seeing the so-called injustices that is being perpetrated on the so-called small man, and the big man gets away. And so that sets the temperature for our society. If we have a disciplined government, a government who follows the law, a government who obeys the laws, and we see justice being carried out, then we would also have a disciplined society. You go into a society where the law is the law, irregardless of who you are, you see that it's totally different. But here, we see something totally different. We see individuals, and right now, I don't know what is going on with this case with Adrian Gibson. He has been on trial for almost 4 years. And it seems like this case is going to be nullied or something like that. Election is almost coming again. We don't have the judiciary cannot bring this case to an end to determine whether he's guilty or not guilty. What is going on in our society? How can we run a society like this? You know, and this is the problem with our society, Doctor and Ms. Green. People has to see that there are consequences for their actions. Because there's a scripture in the Bible, in the book of Judges, it says that in those days, there were no judges in the land. And every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And it seems like this is how our country is being run. People, they drive on the street, they do what they want to do, they do like that. There is no semblance of order, and it's like we don't have any. Every year, we are recruiting more and more police officers, and we are not getting no better society. We are not getting a disciplined society. I understand according to Aaron Green, the police would see the offenders and just, you know, just pass by. We have to do better.
And then obviously we have street justice better now as well. So we have a lot of these drive-by shootings, and persons who are shot are people who are guilty of the worst crimes. And that's the only way they can get some justice.
And then they intimidate the witnesses and they don't show up. And so therefore they, you know, they are allowed to get out until somebody take them out. And people are retaliating. People know these people, and so that is why we have so much of these shootings for these individuals who are out on bail. They feel that they're not getting the justice from the court, so it's vigilante justice that is taking place. And we are too small of a society for this.
And criminals have no fear. I mean, they'll hold up police officers who have guns on them at ATMs. They just have no fear.
There's no fear. There is no fear in this country. The Bible says no fear of God nor man, seems. And so, and people say that, oh, you know, you cannot control people by fear. But, I mean, fear is necessary. Fear is important because it sets limits. The policeman cannot be everywhere. But our law covers the entire Bahamas. And so whatever the penalty for the offenses in New Providence should be the same offense that's in Nagua. And so we need to just do according to what our penalty on the law book says. Anyhow, Dr. and Mr. Green, thanks for your time, man. Have a good one.
Thank you for the wonderful points.
Yeah, well, you know, Doc, I at the beginning of the show, I asked the question, what kind of country we want? And so now I'm going to take us down the road and I'm going to ask the question, what kind of government, what kind of leaders we want? What kind, as the gentleman was talking about, this comes from taking us down the leadership. And as I was explaining to you, we look at leadership as somebody with great vision, academic, intellectual superiority, dynamic oratory skills. But the thing we miss with a leader is the moral force and stable character. Moral force and stable character. These are the kinds of things that we are missing from those who lead us. Moral force and character. Not someone who can just be a great orator and talk big and they say good negotiator, but they have no morals. And this is what is killing not only our country, but the world. Moral leadership.
I agree. We have another call coming. This is Urologist Speaks. Good evening.
Good evening. I actually wanted to make a point about what you spoke about earlier regarding being able to just, like, relax on the beach. About 2-3 years ago, I was an average beach goer, exercised on the beach, meditated on the beach, was going through a difficult time in my life. So it was therapeutic to me to go on Monarchy Beach, right?
Yes.
And I was robbed.
I'm sorry to hear that.
9 a.m. in the morning.
There are career criminals running this country.
That was shocking to me because that was the time I convinced two of my friends to come on this health journey with me. And let's exercise together and be healthy. Let's start off the day right. And we went out there and we were robbed 9 a.m. in full daylight. So to say to your guest was just saying, what I would like for this country is to return to actually being each other's brother's keeper. I think the humanistic part has been lost. I think that we have lost touch with our empathy, because for you to be able to, for the incident just happened the other day, to stop, and I don't think people understand the amount of effort it takes to stop someone's flesh. Like, to actually stab them. Like, for you to be able to do that, like, something's missing. What have us in the generations that we are unable to, not to say that we don't have disagreements. We still have disagreements. But I remember growing up, we had disagreements. We might have gotten physical, but then the next day we are best friends. No?
Yes. Absolutely.
Everyone remember the spot?
Absolutely. Yeah, like, absolutely. That's the area I grew up in also. Yes.
Yeah. So what happened to that?
Yeah. Well,
not what happened to actually ultimately wanting the best for one another. Mm-hmm. Regardless if I know you intimately or as family or not. Mm-hmm. What happened to wanting the best for one another?
I mean, I'm sorry for what you went through, and it's too common a story. Many persons have been robbed repeatedly and held by gunpoint or knife point, but there are too many guns in our in our streets. There are far too many guns.
What I want to speak to with the lady is that she's bringing out, and that I'm trying to say, is again what kind of country we want. And you talk about this in such a philosophical way because we have lost that. We don't love anymore. We don't know how to talk to say even the simple thing of good morning. How are you? When you hear the word good morning and those kind, it's almost like a strange language. People look at you in a strange way because we have lost that.
Itself is strange because we grow up saying good morning. Oh. And not hearing good morning is strange. Right?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. I remember in the hotel industry, and I always talk about this, is because a lot of expatriates come into the industry, and the first thing a Bahamian, you walk into the room, you have to say to them, good morning. If you don't say to them, good morning, they're upset, they're mad. They say you're prejudiced. Because that's how we were used to, you have to, we begin the morning by saying good morning to each other.
Yeah, we're losing our way, and we need to catch ourselves. I don't know. In so many aspects of the society, we're failing.
Well, and this is why I want to go back to that word, the leadership. How do we, you know, we have elections coming up, and I'm not talking about leadership in terms of PLP and FNM. I'm just talking about leadership in terms of the kinds of people we elect to lead us and to get things done in our country. That's what I'm talking about.
And you always treat people with decency. Yeah. You always treat people like they're your family. I can recall there was a colleague of mine who berated me, laughed at me. This was 20 years ago when I was a young doctor. When we're a senior house officer, you work like ungodly hours. You got to do rounds 7 days a week. So Saturday, Sunday, you're still doing rounds. So I remember he would say, he was on my level. He was also a senior officer. He would laugh at me, say, I can do my rounds in 15, 20 minutes. I said, how can you? And then I would be there 4 hours, 5 hours. He said, why would you give up 4 or 5 hours? Because I said, these are my people. This is my country. I want to see these people get better and get out of hospital. It breaks my heart, even at that time, 20 years ago, to see dozens of people on trolleys waiting for a bed. If I can get this one person in a bed better and back to their family, back into society, we can have an open bed for someone else to come into. And he laughed at me. And he said, why do you take so long? I said, first of all, it even doesn't even make sense because one person can take 2 hours if they're having critical lab values, if you need to get this done, if you need to get them medically fit for a life-saving surgery. And part of my purport to this day, and that's part of bedside manner, you remember people. You ask them about their grandchild. You ask them about their aunt. You ask them how their wife is doing. And then the next time you see them, you remember the name of that grandchild. You remember that what school they're going to. That makes them feel that you care about them as a person. There are too many physicians, even at that time, and even, although I got to say across the board, we have excellent physicians, but I'll talk to the younger physicians. Stop calling people by diseases. Stop saying that this patient in bed 7 with the hypertension, that person has a name. That person, think of them as a person. Yes. And that's what we need to do in every occupation. Treat people like they are your family. And that goes a long way. I remember when I was a senior health officer, they used to love to have me on call in the emergency room because I wouldn't wait to be called. I would do rounds every hour and a half, and I would find any potential surgical patient. I was in surgery that I would work up myself. I wouldn't wait for the overworked emergency physician staff to work them up. I would work them up. I would try to get them cleared. And if I had to see them, I would try to get them a bed. I would scour the wards to try to find a bed for this person. And I would do that call after call. There were other colleagues of mine. They would call them 5 times. They would call them 6 times. They would never come. And I remember it was one of the head of accident emergency at Princess Margaret. He said, Greg, that's why you're doing so well to this day, because people knew from that time that you love your patients, that you you did your endeavor best for them, and that you had the wonderful bedside manner, and you had the knowledge, and we knew you would go off and do well, great things, and get fellowships, and come back and help our community and everything else. That's why you're doing so well. There are some other people who we knew from that time never cared. They would do those 15-minute rounds. They cared about buying the Rolex watch, going off to play golf. They cared about the prestige of being a surgeon, but they didn't care that, you know what, these hands are you working through God's grace to save people, and you always got to remember that. In a blink of an eye, all of that can be taken away from you. So treat people as God's child and as your brother and sister. We have a call coming in. This is Urologist Speaks.
That me?
Yes, go ahead.
You're a preacher, Doc. You are super. But what I want to say is this, right? I don't know if this is the right show for me to bring it up on, but I just think that I should bring it up, you know?
Okay, go ahead.
The courts need to do better, because poor people paying their money, and when they got to be coming to court over and over and still not be getting justice, it's just wrong, and it can make people to have an ill feeling towards, you know, the courts, those people in the courts. It's very much immature there. And I'm Braymond Darling Ferguson. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think your sentiments are shared by many in the community, sadly. But they're good in everyone. They're wonderful justices. If you look at a justice, many of them were partners, even senior partners of leading law firms. And they gave that up for a fraction of their pay. Many of them are putting themselves in harm's way because they're threatened. They're making decisions where they can send somebody away for the rest of their life, or financially ruin a business because of a judgment, and they have to walk around with bodyguards. Many of them are my friends, or I know them very well, and I admire them. And all the ones that I know are honest, God-fearing persons. So you can't put all the blame. It's a system that is overwhelmed. Let's start with ourselves. Let's stop committing so many crimes. Let's stop having all these children outside that we don't take care of. Let's look at the children that we have in our home, and let's make sure that we know what they're doing every minute of every day. And then we won't be overburdening the court system. And then we have to blame the police, or we need to blame the justices, or blame the prosecutors, or blame the prisons. Let's stop making criminals, and we can start within our own families. Let's stop the criminality. Let's take care of our own. And unfortunately, we have a lost generation of aimless men. Let's make special attention. And I'm as proud as anyone that the women are excelling, but let's look at the men that we're losing a generation of men. Let's save the next generation of men. Good evening. We have another call. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Pinto. Good evening to Pastor Green, right? Is it Pastor Green, right?
Yeah. No. Honorary Pastor, yes.
I know his voice. He's been on Scoogey Show before, I think.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you know, I always listen to him, but the thing is, he said something that's the head of it, leadership, right? And I always said, you know, it's common sense, you know, leadership, because where are you leading us? And so when we look at, we could go chronologically, we could just look at the problems that we face as a society as a whole. Then the question is, who is addressing the problems? And the problems are multifaceted, right? As we can see, right?
Yes, yes.
And so it's just common sense to listen to you. And Dr. Pinto, I could testify to your humanitarian psyche. I mean, I know the type of person you are, because you see the pain and suffering that I went through. But you could know the fear that was in me at the time of these dilemmas, these health dilemmas, right?
Yes, yes. Well, I was only saying it in the from the perspective I was trying to encourage the younger physician in the next generation, not to have accolades for myself. But thank you.
Now that I have a young son post these dilemmas, these problems, right? Even in a young daughter.
Yes.
I really would like for them to meet you. But the thing is, what's frightening for me is the leadership, and the people believe that once they have power, they deserve the lead. Like Mr. Green is saying. Great oratory skills, and he's type financial. It doesn't even have a degree doesn't give you the prerequisites that require to lead in a country. And all I'm saying is, when I look collectively at the problems, you mentioned the 8-year-old who was shot doing his homework. I just called to let you know that actually is my nephew and niece's first cousin, because his the young man who was killed, his sister has two children from my elder brother.
Yeah, no, it's a very... let me just ask a question. Wasn't that person who was charged with that crime actually fled the country and he had to be extradited back to the Bahamas? Am I correct?
Yes,
is that the correct case?
He was caught earlier part of this year.
What was he doing on bail?
But I don't know, but I think he's influential somewhere down the line. But the thing is, his mother was always posting things on Facebook, and I urged her to stop that. But the thing is, he was killed because the person came for a neighbor.
Okay.
And it just happens to subsequently be sitting there. And I think my nephew, but I remember the account, they was home, but then they actually ran out because they was much younger. But I always wanted to know how it affected him, and I asked him that, because he kind of like changed somewhat, and they become detached. Another one of his first cousins is now in problems with armed robbery and attempted murder, et cetera, et cetera. They shot a guy. I'm just saying, but I mean, when you look at the situation with the stabbing with the prison officer, I like to send a message out to these prison officers. When people go to jail, you know, you try to treat them humanely as possible.
Yes.
You don't harm people if there's no need to. So being that a person is in a cell, I'm trying to figure out what is the reason for prison officers being so belligerent and violent towards inmates. And they have to realize that they're out, and this is what the rumors on the streets is, that this incident up there by C.R. Walker unfolded because of these type scenarios. I've been to prison before. I've been threatened by a prison officer for no reason. Why is handcuffed? I'm not telling you anything. So now the question for me is, and something I want to get in, because it's very important, because the lady called and talked about stabbing. I've stabbed a guy and went to prison for it, okay? And that was how, I don't know how many, Mr. Pinto, it was maybe being like almost about 20 years ago or less. But it was for a reason. It was because...
Well, I'll testify from knowing you've turned your life around. And
yeah,
you are a wonderful
but
citizen.
But it doesn't make you a violent person. But what I'm saying is, yeah. The thing is, what officers would say, they wish the person died so that I could be in a more legal problem, right? This is the type of things they say to people, but they're not humanizing something. But what I'm saying is, you could do something, but you don't have to be a violent person. The thing is, you look at somebody's history, but if you look at institutional violence and what is being done to curtail it, as it relates to police officers, prison officers, government people who, you know, we see the situation where the young man was killed and dumped out South Ocean, and we saw the voice notes with this and that, and nothing is being done. So, and then we have the Minister of National Security still coming on the radio saying the pool of collecting public servants is within from the public. But that gives me an excuse to just allow anybody to enter the public service, serve people them without doing any form of scrutiny, and then just like throwing what they call the Hail Mary in football, and just hope something happens. That's not going to work for our society. Then we look at unabated migration. I don't care from where. As even animals that instinctively know that strangers coming into their territory is warrant for concern. Why, as we are human beings, trying to be so liberal and play like... But the reason why there's a deterioration in the inner city is because we don't really know anybody in the inner city. We can look at... If we look at the homestead that the Christies live there, we look at how it is being run down. Nobody wants to repair it. Nobody wants to... See, this is what people think about the inner city. We have given up our space to migrants, and then we don't know... Let me share something. Yes, the other day, people are going on people's property and going in people's properties and picking coconuts without asking any permission, and they're not bohemians, and they feel they have the right to do this. And this is what we're seeing now. Nobody respects anybody on the road, in life, in general. And so it's a gradual deterioration, and there's hatred, and we're breeding. The inner city now, for me, is a production line for criminals. And I hate to say it, but it is what it is. Generation, I mean, you smoke a little weed, you do a little this, you do a little that. But what I'm saying is, you're seeing younger people being charged with murder, but yet still nobody's addressing this problem. When I called Aaron the other day, and I said that just about 2 weeks ago, Mr. Pinto, Dr. Pinto, was in the shop working. I was kind of stunned, Pastor Green, because I saw about six or seven young guys, maybe from 7 to about 12, on bicycles. It looks strange. It was in the school hours, and they're riding around. They're normal, and nothing is going on. Nothing is happening. There's no fear of being like a truant officer or whatever. So we are allowed to just do, from traffic to the injustices and the criminal justice system, everything is just being allowed to fester and deteriorate while the people sit and talk. But I urge to see, being a good citizen, Dr. Pinto, is not just sitting down and hoping and praying for the government to do the right thing, or just congruent with every imposition the government makes. It doesn't make sense. That doesn't make you a good citizen. And I'm afraid that my... And so you said something very important with the young man in the state. Dr. Penta, I really hate for my children to grow up in this country. I live in the inner city. I grew up out east, grew up in Sunshine Park. My parents sent me to private school. But when I see the deterioration, I'm afraid for my little son. There's no way in the world, when I look at what's going on in the government schools, et cetera, and the things that my little daughter's telling me and I'm seeing, it's like, what are we doing to stop the problems? What are we doing?
Let me ask you a question. When your children go off to university and they achieve greatness, are you going to encourage them to come home, or would you encourage them to not come home?
She has a bachelor's degree. I think she's doing a master's degree, so my brother told me. And I know she's going to stay up there in Minnesota. I just know her. She's not going to. And I think she has a degree in psychology, and she's doing business or accounting or something else. But she's very bright. She graduated from Sox in Augusta. So what I'm saying is, I can't tell them. I have two cousins from Exuma. They one is the track star, one is this one, and they didn't come back. My first cousin, Vincent Forbes, he's back in Freeport. But what I'm saying is, he's a heart surgeon and a heart doctor. What I'm saying is, how many of them are not going to come back? That's what you're looking at.
But you know. Let me say something about that. You know, the country becomes what is called a brain drain. And it also speaks to the fact that if you don't protect what you have, you won't have it. And so I encourage anyone who goes off to school to come back home.
Yes.
That's the only way we are going to change what we have.
But not cutting you off, Pastor Green, but we have to make them feel... You know, we have to value them. This is what I'm saying. You can imagine if someone like Dr. Pinto, Dr. Gray, all of these different doctors, Robbie Roberts, all of these different people didn't come back, doctors. You didn't come back. But what I'm saying is you have to appreciate. You see, when I hear doctors talking about crying about pay and the nurses crying about pay, I get so angry because these people are very important. You don't understand that. When you, my wife saw a doctor named Dr. Markey the other day in the hospital. They had a conversation, and what was disclosed? And so I know that people like Dr. Markey love the Bahamian people. So you can imagine if these people don't come back. Look at the situation with the hospital. This has been a large affair. To be honest with you, Dr. Pinto, when I sit and think about being in a hospital with no AC, no comfort, no serenity, I'd rather commit suicide, even though God is on my side. I just can't, you know, to be suffering and pain, I'm very reluctant. I'd take my last $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 and try to. But I hate to do it because I have young children. I'm paying taxes more than this. Disproportionately paying taxes as I have a small business. I spend a lot of money in these fabric places. I spend the money more than doing what I'm supposed to do. And then I have young children at this age. There's no concessions for, they're still bound on children's medication, children's clothing, etc. But yet still these fools running around here with PLP and F&M. Dr. Pinder, I'm so sick, I'm ready to give up the ghost because I wish I was 50,000 people where I could go downtown and show the government what time it is because these jokers who people worship in Dr. Pinder, you know, it sickens me most, Pastor Green. People putting trust in mere men, simple flesh that hurts my heart. We are powerful as one set of people. We need to come together and stormy the weather. I'm not even worried about hurricanes and extraterrestrials and climate change. And you got people pushing these agendas, Dr. Penn, and I swear to God, they're very ignorant about these things and be just being driven like cattle about whatever imposition people are doing. You think I worry about any climate change? I worry about these youths I'm running around here with these guns and everything. Y'all have a good night, man.
Well, thank you, and you're very frustrated like many of us, but you can never give up. That's what we're here. We're trying to do something. We're trying to create some positivity. And I think the media is also at fault. There's not enough highlighting of positivity. So many, we're trying to reach out to the young men we're losing that generation of young men. There's so many men doing great things. We don't hear anything about it. What does it take for a young man to be on the front page or the first part of the newscast? Oh, they're arrested as a suspect for armed robbery and double homicide. But why are so many people doing so many wonderful things and doing Bahamian first? Even my co-host who's away at the time today, Dr. Wesley Francis, grew up with nothing. Didn't know where his next meal was coming from. Didn't know his father. Hardly had his electricity on. Didn't know where his next meal was coming from. Second Street to Grove. He went on to become the first fellowship-trained surgical oncologist in Bahamian history. I've never seen anything written about him in the paper. I don't see him in the front page of the paper. I don't see anything in the news about him. Those are the kind of stories that can inspire someone who's from Second Street to Grove to know that if he can make it, anybody can make it. So I think the media is also at fault. Obviously, you need to have a crime report, but does it always have to be on the front page? Can't we have some positivity when things are going well, so that we, even when the tourists, even if they don't buy the NASA Guardian, when they go by and they see it in the store, they can see, all right, these some great things are being done in this country, not rapists arrested or double homicide suspect arrested, or this one sentenced to 28 years in jail for molesting his three children, or et cetera, et cetera. Let's have some more positivity so we can have a glimmer of hope.
Doc, you're so right, and I must be interesting for tourists when they pick up the Guardian, and that's the first thing they say. But I'll go back to that question again, and I'll keep asking it: what kind of country, what kind of society we want? And as Bahamians, we really have to think about that: what kind of country we want, what kind of society we want, in order to change direction, or to, as the gentleman who called earlier, so frustrated about everything that is happening, we have to ask, we have to do better.
I mean, we can start with, if we have the nuclear family, we spoke about this at length last week, if we have a married couple living under God's message, loving their children, showing them the right and showing them the wrong, guiding the path for them. But then we look at 75% of Bahamian homes are headed by a woman, woman carrying the weight of the entire household. And there's a huge mating gap in the Bahamas. We talk about the frustration of men, women as well. I mean, between the type of men that a woman, the typical Bahamian, educated, successful Bahamian woman is looking for, and the life partner / husband prospects that are available, and the type of men that are available. There's a critical dating recession in the Bahamas, and there are many women who never get married, never have children, because they've given up, because they can't find that life partner, because they're outnumbered 10 to 1.
Well, I mean, they're just not on what I call, when the Bible talks about being equally yoked, how do you find a man that you could relate to, that you could have an intellectual conversation, a decent conversation, you can build a future, you can plan. And most of our men are out to lunch. The only thing they can talk about is the next beer. I mean, you know, so we have a real, that's a real issue.
I mean, the Bahamas is seeing a critical and a horrifying decline in highly educated and successful married couple. And that should be the bedrock and foundation of our future in our society. And it's a scarcity. It's an absolute. And so from this perspective alone, the future of the Bahamas looks bleak. And how are we going to rectify that? We need to save the young men. Because the women should be our guiding light. They are doing wonderful things. Yeah. They are doing wonderful things.
Most of them.
But the men are failing. We're failing the men. We're failing the young boys. We can't put it all on them. They weren't asked to be born into this world. They didn't. They were created as a murderer. They were created as a rapist. They were created as a criminal. And it's the society, it's the church, it's the family that failed them. And it's a crying shame. The Bahamas is suffering from a loss of positive male models. There are not enough males in the education system, not enough male teachers, male principals, and male guidance counselors. So if you don't have a father in the home, at least when you go to school, and you spend most of your life as a child in school anyway.
See a man.
Yeah. So I know we said a lot in terms of negativity to shine a light on that, but let's look for solutions, Bahamas. Let's have a healthier body. Let's have a healthier mind. Let's have a healthier society. Any last words, Mr. Calvin Green?
Well, I will go back to the... I want to say what kind of country we want. We have to think about that really, really seriously, and see what we can do as Bahamians to make our country better.
Let's have a healthy and a safe week, Bahamas, and we'll see you next week, Wednesday. Good night.